Good afternoon, good morning, good evening. Welcome to your All About Windows Phone Insight podcast. It's number 14 and we're recording this on Friday, February the 10th. 2012. How impressive does that sound? Not as impressive as my three guests, some of the most impressive voices around the Windows Phone ecosystem that write for a site called All About Windows Phone. First up, in the depths of despair and disease, he's been missing for 2 weeks. But now he has returned triumphantly on a white horse, pulling behind him a mini metro as his transport. It's a welcome back to the newly healed Steve Litchfield.
Well, hello. I'm not sure how much of that is true, but it's nice to be back.
Okay, right. We'll skip the mini metro bit then. Never one to miss a podcast and always on his feet, raring to go. Up in Hull, we have David Gilson.
Hello, Ewan. I'm not always on my feet, but I am ready to go.
Oh, it's audio. We can all imagine. We're all standing around in a bar having a good old chat about Windows Phone. Sometimes it goes light and fluffy. Sometimes it goes into huge amounts of in-depth comprehension. But the man keeping us on the straight and narrow with all the numbers and facts and figures to his fingertips also joins us. Rafe Blanford is going to be our next co-host on the show today. Welcome, Rafe.
Hello, everybody. Thank you, Ewan. And in case people are wondering, we do try and occasionally restrain Ewan from his more flamboyant openings, but the control has varying degrees of success.
I know. You should have heard the one we recorded before this one. I mean, it had everything. Dances, girls, Fluff Freemans, the Trogues playing Wild Thing in the background, but I wasn't allowed that, was I, Rafe?
No.
Now, we've been told that we have to cut down on the fluff and speculation and go for some real meat. Therefore, I think we'll go straight into the most important story of the week, which is this. The Nokia Lumia is going to be available in white.
And not just white, it's going to be gloss white, so it's nice and shiny too. A proper shiny gadget toy.
Which means we have to do an in-depth discussion, and that can only mean, guys, what would be your favourite colour of smartphone?
This is the fluffery episode, is it?
It is, yes. This is colour. This is important. You know, this isn't like us watching the War Games with Patrick Troughton in 1969. This is colour, baby. Steve, favourite colour?
Absolutely has to be black because of the fact that you've got the AMOLED screen, so blacker than black colours. And if you have a black screen with gorgeous blacks, what's the point in a bright coloured surround? So the phone has to be black too.
David, without any Spinal Tap references, favourite colour?
No Spinal Tap references. I have to agree with Steve. Jet black, although if we're going for a little bit of fluff, let's have some urban binary camouflage.
Oh, binary camouflage? What, you're going to cover it in ones and zeros?
No, if you see modern camouflage, it's all in sort of squares because it actually breaks up the outline of a person more. It's the pinnacle of stealth technology.
And right, so you want a stealth phone. Fair enough. Rafe, you see how much insight we have on this podcast when we just ask a simple question like colour. What have you got for us?
Well, darling, obviously it depends on the colour of my shoes.
And the typical Britishman will have a sort of brown hush puppy leather.
Yeah, so actually, in reality, although I quite like the idea of dazzle camouflage, as they used to use in the Second World War on some of the transatlantic convoys, if it comes down to it, yes, black is probably the most boring answer, but I quite like the idea of a cyan Lumia device because I have seen those in person and they do look very nice. So a bit of variation. And the white one, I've seen the pictures of it. I haven't seen it in person yet. But there's no doubt it stands out. And I think we're probably all quite conservative in our tastes. I know a lot of people do like having a different coloured device. And the magenta one also stands out. That's certainly eye-catching when it's sitting on the desk. I have seen that one as well. I think we'll probably see a yellow one before too long as well. So you've got those cyan, yellow, magenta, black and white, and you know, all those colour mixes.
When we look at Nokia's palette, they actually have like five sort of base colours for all their accessories. So the chances are we're going to see all five of them come in, I would think, Rafe, yes?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the reason it's taken a while is with this polycarbonate shell is it's not actually painted on or a colour like that. Actually, effectively, what you're doing is dyeing the polycarbonate. You mix up the polycarbonate, which sort of is a liquid before it is injected into a mould, and you insert throw in a pigment, and that will then colour the entirety of the polycarbonate, which is why it's referred to as integral colour, and actually is why it can survive scratches, in the sense you won't see a plastic underneath or a non-colour underneath. So it takes a while to get those pigments looking exactly right. I mean, Nokia, when talking about this white device, for example, said they went through several hundred different variants to get it looking just right, and it's to do with the transparency and the luminosity, and you're getting it just right. But for me, yes, gloss white probably isn't what I'd personally choose, but judging by some of the comments I've seen on the web and on the website, lots of people do like the idea of a pure white device, and choice, I guess, it's always a good thing.
For me, I'd like a really deep purple one, and that's not musical reference. I always remember the colour that Sony made their PlayStation. They had this lovely sort of purple, slightly sparkly off-gloss. That was one. The only problem was it had Hannah Montana written at the top of it, so I couldn't quite stomach supporting Billy Ray Cyrus's daughter, so I had to stay with the black. But for me, a nice, solid midnight purple will be the colour for me. But speaking of phone and construction and stuff, we do have some serious stuff coming on. Rafe, we're going to lead you off with this one as well, which is the Nokia factories in Europe are scaling down, aren't they?
That's right. I mean, Nokia announced this early in the week, along with sort of 4,000 job losses. So we're talking a pretty major shutdown. There are going to be some activities at these mainly European factories, but also I think it's one of the ones in Mexico. What's happening is the actual construction of the devices is going to go out to the Asian factories. And these are Nokia owned and controlled factories. So a contrast with some manufacturers where they basically outsource everything and don't have their own factory. So there is still some difference there, but I think this has been a bit inevitable. And so the Salo factory, for example, and the Nokia factory in Hungary are both going to shrink considerably. And instead of actually building the devices, they'll be used to do the software customization. What people might not be aware of is there's actually hundreds of variants of each product, depending on which country it's going to, which operator, and which accessories are in the box and that kind of thing. And that itself is quite a complex process. You know, it's not just, you know, one or two variants, it's actually hundreds of them. And delivering them to the right place at the right time with the right stuff and the right software is not entirely straightforward. So that's what those European factories will be doing. But it is kind of the end of an era for Nokia, which for a long time has done a lot of its device production sort of in the market that it's near, so in Europe, in the Americas, and obviously still out in Asia. I think, as I said in the news story about this, it's inevitable. I mean, Nokia's actually been the odd one out in returning its kind of global production facilities. And, you know, they said in their press release this is about transport costs and time to market, and unquestionably that's part of it. You know, all the component suppliers are out in Asia as well. I suspect labour costs also have a big element to this. It's simply cheaper to build devices out in Asia, and that's where the expertise is, and there's a big labour pool and big expertise to draw on. A lot of people get quite upset about the idea of not having a device that's made in Finland or wherever it happens to be, and say there's a difference in quality. I think you might have been able to argue that a decade ago, but I don't think there's any quality difference now. I think for those that you'll find that will say, I want my device built in Finland, you'll find some that think the quality is higher from the Chinese factories. And undoubtedly, quality control will be something I watch very carefully. I think the added dimension to this may be, given the recent PR there's been, particularly around Apple and the Foxconn factories, Nokia will probably want to watch it from a PR point of view to make sure the working conditions are fine. But as I say, there is a slight difference here in that it is still a Nokia owned and controlled factory, and they're mainly going to be in South Korea and China, although I suspect the factories in India will also benefit, and there's a new factory due to open in Vietnam. But yes, end of an era for Nokia, but no real surprise there, I don't think.
And if you're looking to buy a Lumia, then the factory next door to whichever factory pops up in China will be churning them out about 4 days afterwards. Yeah. Right then, let's move on. If you've got your Ewan hosting the Insight Bingo cards, you can mark off one of those squares and you can sit back. And if you get all five of them in a line, you can order yourself a pizza. But David, now we can order ourselves our pizza with a difference. Lots of cheese and a bit of a phone.
Yes, and any toppings you like. Yes, if on Windows Phone now, there is an app for the UK pizza chain Domino's Pizza. So if you live in the UK or Ireland, you can just whip out your phone and you can fire download and fire up the app, and you can get a full menu, a store locator, any deals that are available on meals, and you can customize your pizza topping order or even make special requests and choose whether you want to pay by credit card or cash on collection. So I have to say, looking at the screenshots of this application, this is one case where the typography of Windows Phone 7 really lends itself well, because the screenshots look very much like the menus that I often get through my doors. If there's anyone in America listening to this feeling slightly left out because they don't want to wait for a pizza to be delivered from the UK, there is also a Pizza Hut application as well.
And what I like about this, David, is that Domino's really are pushing the end here. I mean, most of the UK pizza home delivery market is either Domino's or Pizza Hut, with a couple of locals as well. And Pizza Hut have nothing. I mean, their online offering is okay on the website, but it's not a patch on Domino's, in my opinion. And I'm Scottish. I know a lot about home delivery pizza. They really have pushed ahead. I know Pizza Hut, Pizza Express, I've done quite a bit for their restaurant stuff, and they've paired up with PayPal, so you can pay with PayPal on your phone and such like. But Domino's have really pushed ahead. They've got a good client. I love the fact that once you put your order in, it will tell you the best meal deal rather than you having to guess at the start of your order. And at the same time, anything that reduces friction on a customer sale, no matter the sale or the environment, is a good thing.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because pizza seems to be one of those e-commerce activities that kind of lends itself to mobile. You know, there's been plenty of activity, and indeed this application is effectively a port from, I think, Android and iOS. And quite a lot of revenue is being driven through it, in the UK at least, and that certainly applies elsewhere. I think it's probably because it's a relatively predictable thing that you're going to order, and people don't necessarily feel the need to, you know, maybe see it in person, or there's just a slightly different feel to it. I mean, takeaways on mobile, yeah, it kind of does work, because often people are saying, I want convenience, I want it quickly. It kind of ties in with all of that. But to what David said, yes, I think actually this works particularly well on Windows Phone, because the kind of Metro design language does tie in with the same ethos in terms of the look and feel. So it was quite, I was quite impressed to see this application, because it's obviously Domino's making an investment in Windows Phone at a point where I think they can probably question the economics of it, simply because there aren't that many Windows Phone users in the UK. But maybe they're going, yes, we want to be ahead of the curve on this, as Ewan was suggesting there.
It's also about gaining knowledge. I mean, yes, okay, this might not break even. You know, there might be high development costs on this, and it doesn't make that much of a saving all talk, but it gains customer knowledge. And that is, you know, that's a vital resource for companies that are doing just-in-time delivery. And pizza is, if not, but just-in-time delivery. So let's move on from that. Now we're all nicely stuffed. Once you've had your pizza, you'll probably want to go out and make a feature film. And in the old days, you'd have to fly to Tunisia, get Kenny Barker, put him in a little bucket and trundle him down a good, because Tunisia's not famous for anything else. But nowadays, you can do it at home. And one of the big, and I know lots of people know about YouTube, but Vimeo is the one where the sort of filmmakers and the indie guys, that's where they love to put their stuff up. It's far more for HD content. And now we have a Windows Phone application available as well. Vimeo is an official one. There's been quite a few unofficial ones, but this is the one that has the stamp of approval. And it's a pretty slick implementation, isn't it, Steve?
It absolutely is, yes. Just to explain to people, Vimeo, in case you're wondering what Ewan was on about, a lot of people would have heard of Vimeo, but it's actually really rather slick. And as Ewan says, it's somewhat more professional than YouTube, and there's less sort of cats on skateboards and so forth. You can, in addition to scanning through all the different categories of video actually on Vimeo, you can upload your own content as well, and you can edit them and add descriptions and all the rest of the thing. You can share videos you like with your friends on Vimeo and friends on the wider world and Facebook and Twitter. There's one big caveat, though, and I want to come to Rafe on this, because although you can upload video you capture within Vimeo itself, you can't then, you know, you can't have previously shot a video on your Windows Phone and it's just sitting there in the gallery, if you like. You can't then upload that. The two seem to be siloed apart from each other. Is that right, Ray?
Yes, Steve, having tried out the application, that certainly is the case. I think I'm right in saying there are some limitations from the programming point of view with the APIs on whether it's accessible here, and it's kind of the silo approach to data. I think there may be some ways around it, and certainly I expect this is something that will get fixed in a future update. But if you look at some of the other video applications, yes, the limitations on uploading video are there. There is a YouTube uploader, I believe, in the marketplace, but on the official applications, yeah, this limitation does seem to be fairly universal. It's a shame, I think. On the other hand, given that content consumption, I think, is probably the primary thing here, especially on a mobile device and especially for Vimeo, where, you know, the uploads are going to tend to be more professional. So I suspect the number of people really wanting to upload from their mobile device is relatively restricted. It does speak to the fact that, you know, perhaps the platform still has some way to go. Even if there is a workaround, it's something that's not very easy to do. And obviously it's allowable for images, and you can get in and look at images and videos as in terms of external data, but most applications can't get at data unless it's specifically enabled by one of the APIs in the Windows Phone platform. You know, this siloization of data is a deliberate security thing, you know, and there are good reasons for doing this. You know, you don't want applications being able to get at data willy-nilly. And nonetheless, you know, in an instance like this, yes, you probably would want to be able to upload a video that you'd captured earlier.
It's not the first time this happens. So, I mean, if you look at the way of sharing, even like text and web pages, you know, there are certain things that Microsoft Windows Phone will let you do in a sharing pop-up as a coder, and some that you can't. I know that there are some applications that literally have to write their own sharing client. I think Pictures Lab is one of them, because they just don't have the ability to do that through rich media. You know, they can push it up to social network, they can push it out to email, but they can't push it up to a specific site that's outside of that requirement.
Yeah, that's right, Ewan. And I think it's kind of a reflection of the fact that, as I said, Windows Phone still has some maturing to do for that kind of thing. I think especially for those who've used Android and Symbian, they'll be surprised by that lack of flexibility. So it's something people maybe need to be aware of. But it probably comes in the same boat as things like sharing things via Bluetooth, which basically isn't possible at the moment. And it's something that's very common in Symbian, and particularly in some markets, it's kind of regarded as a must-have feature. So it's interesting to see this impacting on an application whereby you'd think, actually, that is a functionality that would make a lot of sense to have.
Yeah, and speaking of the maturing of Windows, Windows Phone, of course, is part of a huge strategy that involves Xbox and tablets and PCs as well. Windows Phone 8 it's not being called a beta, it's being called a public preview or something coming up through. And there's hints of what Windows 8 will be doing to Windows Phone in the future as well. And it's worth pointing out, Rafe, that this bit of maturing isn't going to happen until the end of 2012 and well into 2013. This isn't a February the 11th, really, is it? I mean, this is a February the 10th.
That's right. I mean, we're expecting there to be an intermediate update, if you like, before the next big release of Windows Phone. But we've been told that the major focus on that is actually expanding the number of markets in which Windows Phone is available and making them available on lower cost devices. So that's probably going to be around resource requirements and localization. But what you're referring to here is kind of Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8, which is sort of scheduled roughly for later in 2012. We'll probably actually hear more about the dates when we have this consumer preview. And it is significant because it's when Windows as a desktop platform and as a tablet platform and as a mobile platform get tied together much more closely. And there's been bits of information coming out on that over the last few weeks. You know, we've talked about this before, kind of the Metro style applications, and there's going to be an App Store introduced. And I think it's fair to say, in summary, and if people want to go and have a look at the technical details, I'd encourage them to do so, because there's quite a bit out there now, and there's stuff now on Windows on ARM and all that kind of thing. That the important point is that there's going to be more sharing of code and components between the various platforms. And particularly for Windows Phone, what I think that will mean is that the application economics will change, because Metro apps, which are going to be introduced to Windows on the desktop, will have a lot of commonality with Windows Phone apps. It's yet to emerge just how much commonality, but it could be to the extent that all you're really doing is rewriting the presentation there to be suitable for a desktop as opposed to a phone. And even then, some of these applications will just run in a column down the side of a desktop screen and might look identical on phone and desktop, but certainly there'll be shared resources. And so the economics of creating Windows Phone applications might change quite radically within the next 12 months, simply because there'll be these Metro apps for the desktop, which will suddenly mean there's a whole nother market out there, quite apart from the growing user base of Windows Phone devices. And so this is why we're keeping such a careful eye on the developments of Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8, as it will probably be called, you know, no official announcements yet on that. But yes, it is one we definitely need to keep an eye on. But in terms of the big changes we're talking about and the maturing of the platform, that's when we can expect a lot more updates to APIs and the way things work. both a low level and obviously the high level abstractions as well. So in terms of when we talk about things that are missing or incomplete, I would be looking to the next major update to the platform to fix a lot of these things. And I have no doubt that there will be stuff to do after that as well. But that's why people have sort of started talking about the end of 2012 as being such a significant milestone, because there is this big update due. And actually, it's going to be bigger than Mango was in 2011. So when we're talking about this stuff, we kind of have to paraphrase it with the there's stuff to come later in the year. Hopefully that clears up the situation for people.
The thing is, we don't know for sure, for example, if the handsets that we have just now, like Lumia 800s, like the Titan 2s, will be updated to the next version of Windows 4. But the indications are that certainly the Gen 2 devices will go up to this Gen 4, as it were. But your phone's going to work for a year. You know, it's still going to do really well. It's still going to have all these applications out there. So don't delay buying if you're listening to this podcast as sort of scout out the Windows phone.
You're right, Ewan. There has been no official indication. One thing we can say is any Windows Phone apps will continue to work on the next version. That's been confirmed. In fact, it was said back at Mix 11 last spring. So the apps are fine. We'll have to wait and see on the hardware front.
So let's bring that right into the present day. Let's bring that into the now, of course. It's all about applications now. Yeah, I know people are going to argue back and forth, but let's, for the next 5 minutes, let's assume that it's all about applications. I mean, we're getting something like Rafe Tuna, 2,000 to 3,000 applications a day appearing in the Windows marketplace. Yes,
I think you mean a week there, Ewan. It's 2,000 to 3,000 a week. But yes, you know, there's an increasing rate, and it does vary enormously from week to week. We're currently at about the 67,000 mark.
At one point, we will get that number of applications a day, and the problem that we're about to discuss will be sevenfold times difficult. It's about application discoveries. I did know that we've got an article up on the website that being featured in the marketplace panorama can lead to up to 2,000% increase in downloads. And I know we have the situation in other platforms that, you know, to get those numbers, you need to be in the top lists, you need to get featured, or you don't go through. Windows Phone isn't quite there. But I want to talk a little bit about both the discovery process and what the developer can do to make sure that their application is strong. And Steve, I want to come to you because I know in your past you've written a lot about how to promote applications, how to make sure you get sales on previous PDA platforms. I mean, those rules then, I mean, do they still apply now?
The old rules, they still apply to you, and you have to produce a quality application. You have to make people feel good about using it. You make them have to think about wanting to go from the trial version to actually go ahead and look, researching the commercial version and buying it. You have to get the word out, the buzz out on the streets these days. It's much easier, of course, with social networks. It's much easier with sites like All About Windows Phone and others to send out press releases to let people know about your application. There's a lot of work needs to go into making a good program and making it a success, and that never changes.
And, of course, that then leads to the issue of discovery. He said we do have that social media landscape. David, I want to come to you in this one because you're almost a regular user here on the podcast. So how are you finding your applications?
Two main ways. First of all, if there's something I want, I will go and search for it. And secondly, word of mouth, usually through blogs, because actually we've got our own app tracker here at All About Windows Phone, and I'm reading the site, and there's the other Windows Phone blogs, which we should give a shout out to. It's WP Central and WM Power User. All three sites find really good apps which pique my interest. Although I've got something of a maybe subversive view on advertising, because this thing of having featured apps, when I go into Windows Phone Marketplace, I always just swipe past that because I always feel like advertising is like, it's any type of advertising is usually unsolicited, and it's not, and by definition, it's like not what I'm interested in. So I don't care if something's been featured or not, because just because it's been featured doesn't mean I need it. So I look for what I need.
Rafe, obviously we've got numbers going through the back end of the site and everything, but speaking in general, how difficult an issue is this now, and how difficult is it going to be going forward?
I think discovery is the big challenge in app stores in general, and no one's really solved it in a satisfactory way. You know, the featured app discussion, yes, that does work. There's no doubt about it, but there's only so many spots, and in one sense, that's kind of a fix for a broken system. Ideally, you want applications to pop up automatically, you know, some kind of intelligence to it, but actually designing a system like that is incredibly difficult. I mean, if you're a developer sort of despairing out there, don't. I think there's a lot you can do to make your application stand out and sort of, if you like, promote it over the others. And it's really about common sense type things. When you are emailing people about your application, be that all about Windows Phone or one of the other blogs or someone else, it really helps to have a succinct summary, to include some screenshots, ideally include a YouTube video, include links where people can go and get it, you know, make it as frictionless as possible for people to write about or share your application. And that goes into the design of the application as well. You can build in a sharing functionality, maybe encourage people to rate your application, although that can be a double-edged sword, I guess, sometimes. And it's that kind of attitude, you know, when you're writing your copy for the marketplace, watch that very carefully. Make sure you choose the right screenshots. Because, I mean, if you go and have a look at the marketplace now, an awful lot of applications have relatively brief, I would say poor descriptions. So it's quite easy to stand out by making a bit of effort there. And, you know, the process doesn't end when you finish writing the code. It's very much a process that only really begins then. And I think a lot of indie developers in particular have a lot of work to do there. So, you know, that's what one, you know, thing to say. But as I say, come back to discovery as it's as a subject as a whole is something that I think still bears a lot of discussion, debate. Where's it going to go next? And actually, I'm not really sure. I'd love to, you know, get some feedback on this, you know, what can be done to fix it, because the same thing that's happened to the other app stores is going to happen to Windows Phone as the numbers increase. You know, it gets to the point where search doesn't become quite so reliable, especially for picking out new applications, because, you know, you have the established incumbent applications that will tend to float to the top of any top lists by downloads or by ratings. And a new application can come in and actually be better than something that's already there, but just not get the right amount of visibility. And there's a certain amount you can do to manually do that by doing featured apps, for example, or by doing smart marketing campaigns. But it's not something that's a fair process necessarily. It's one that has a certain amount of luck and randomness built into it. You can improve your odds, but you can't get rid of that element of chance altogether.
Steve, I know that you've had many comments on this, and certainly I know that you look at the Apple Store and it's millions of applications. Is it still possible to find new content when you have the store's volumes up in the multiple millions of applications?
I'm not sure about millions of applications, but I get your point. There was a time, actually, about a year and a half ago, anecdotally, when I was writing iPhone reviews for an iPhone website, just as my job as a writer, and I would scan through the what's new list, you know, as we all do on most of my mobile platforms, say what's been released in the last day, the last week, and so forth. And it was absolute nightmare. I'd do my work 1 week. I'd review 10 programs next week, and there would be 600 or 700, maybe over 1,000 programs just in a particular category to scan through. And it became quickly, I got completely and utterly swamped by it. Discovery is a huge, huge problem when you get those sort of numbers, which is why I keep coming back to the idea of manufacturers should curate their app stores more. I did see a link, I don't know if any of you caught it, that the new CEO of BlackBerry was commenting that you don't need huge numbers. He was saying, we don't want to put any old fluff on our app store because it does our entire ecosystem a disservice. And I think there's a lot to be said for that.
And we do have the starting of the, obviously Nokia have the App Highlights application, but there's also a specific Nokia category inside the marketplace. When you go through on a Lumia phone, HTC have their own bit as well. I don't have any direct experience of the Samsung ones, but it wouldn't surprise me if they have a hub as well. I know that they have one on Android.
Yeah, Samsung have their own hub. I mean, for all of these manufacturer hubs, they're tending to use them just for the applications they've created themselves. And Nokia have done App Highlights, which is a application effectively that has recommendations from Nokia. So that's kind of approaching the curated app store. There are a couple of apps also available in the marketplace which aim to improve this discovery process. AppFlow is one of them, which basically has lists that some are automatically created, you know, top indie games, for example, or top rated applications. Others are manually created and then looked after. And I do think this idea of curation in an app store is something that we're going to see a lot more of. You know, a certain amount of human editing can result in, you know, pretty attractive lists. Even so, there's only so far that can go. And I think probably more artificial intelligence, for want of a better word, is maybe going to be needed to really solve this problem. part of it will also solve itself, because I think there has been an App Store gold rush in that there's lots of people spending time developing applications, but not all of them are making money. And so that will die off a little bit. You know, we are in kind of the honeymoon period where everyone wants to create a mobile app, but that isn't going to stop with that. There's still going to be hundreds of thousands of applications in each App Store, regardless of what platform you're on. And it becomes, yeah, it does become a minefield to sort of negotiate that and try and find the apps that are suitable for you. And, you know, it's fine for someone like big brands who can do a certain amount of promotion, you know, outside the device. And, you know, people will tend to search for those. But I think it's particularly difficult for the independents, which don't necessarily have a big established brand, to kind of establish themselves and become the preeminent application. You know, we all know examples of where that has happened on all platforms. You can say, oh yeah, you know, this indie developer has produced the best application for doing X, Y, or Z, or is well known for producing great games. But I think it's a problem that's going to run and run. And I'd love to hear some feedback from our listeners on what they think, how they find applications, and how they'd like to be able to find applications, if you will.
I have to say, I think, if I may be so bold, I think we have the curation problem is already solved. It's sites like us. People like All About Windows Phone and other sites, and likewise for other ecosystems. Us people spend all our time looking at apps and testing things out, and then we publish our opinions. And to me, that is what should replace advertising, because advertising is a push form of marketing. Information is pushed onto you when you didn't ask for it. Whereas when there are reviews sitting on file on a server, someone knows what they need, they can go and read impartial opinions on it. So I think, I'm sorry, but I think we have a solution.
I think David's probably being slightly more radical. Get rid of capitalism and advertising because it's all evil. I actually think advertising has an important role to play. And the thing about advertising is it's only irritating when it's not relevant. And when it becomes relevant, is it still advertising? David will probably be screaming in the back channel and tearing his hair out when I say things like that. But I don't have any problem with artificial promotion. And it's inevitable that that's going to be largely financially driven. And I think, yes, websites like All About Windows Phone and other experts in the domain have a role to play. But I think the volumes we're talking about means even that is not going to be sufficient. And, you know, curation, human curation, as I'm suggesting, with websites being one element of that, is certainly one part of the answer, but it's not all the answer, for me at least.
And speaking of curation of applications, we're going to close off the podcast with two things. One, of course, as you've heard there from Rafe, if you want to join in the debate, do so at the website. And second, our weekly curation. What have we been using this week that we've been enjoying? And if you're looking for something to have a go at this weekend with a, this is quite nice, then not a problem. Let's do that. Round the table, our applications of the week. David, seeing as we are the creators, what would you like to curate?
I would like to stop music. Not
seriously. You've heard me sing then.
Yes. Anyway, yes, we all have the problem that maybe we like to go to sleep listening to some music on our smartphone, but we don't want to run the battery down with it playing music all night. And barring laying there in bed trying to get sleep, making a short playlist, you just have to let the whole album play through. And bring back these sleep timers of our old AM radio alarm clocks. Well, that is exactly what Stop Music does. You set off your music playing from the music hub, go into this app, set how long you want the music to play for, and then leave that app in the foreground, and it does work behind the lock screen, and it will stop the music playing when the time has elapsed, and it's free.
There we go. And two in the bingo card. Steve, what have you got?
I've got a Fantasia Painter. Now, a painting program on any kind of computer is always a bit frustrating because you go in and you zoom in and you've basically got blobs and square bits and edges, and it's all looking very computery and very artificial and very binary. Fantasia Painter does a great job on Windows Phone of making it all very organic. So, for example, if I go into the painting tools, rather than just line and square, and you've got sketch, small fur ball, paint, fairy lights, twisted squares. You've got a wonderful range of textures and ways you can paint. And even better than that, it appears almost like a sort of spray paint with an aerosol, whereby the longer you linger on a particular spot, the more paint gets laid down, and you can really play with your opacity. You can apply a myriad of special effects, just going through a few at random: colorize, mold, dark dream, shadow, color select, beauty reveal. I mean, it's just a wonderful selection. And you go through to the Windows Phone Marketplace, where you can grab other effects to just plug in. White point fix, simulated HDR. It goes on and on and on. Fantasia Painter for £1.50. Anyone who's got any kind of artistic bent, it's just an incredibly in-depth program. I'm down to review this, Ewan, but I may be a couple of weeks. There's a lot to play with, but highly recommended.
There we go. For me, highly recommended comes Sky Sports News. It's been a tumultuous world. If you're hoping for the England football team to implode before the Euro Championships, for them to crash out horribly in the first round. So I'd be quite happy. I'm keeping track of things from the Sky News team. This is applications and news reader to bring in video and text and the Sky Sports radio channel to keep you up to date with what's happening in your favorite sports and football as well. It's a free download, lots of media going on. It's nice, good use of the Windows Phone interface. It's flashy, it's slidey, but it's also very direct, and you can find out what's happening straight away with facts and commentary and opinion all laid in there. And it's just nice to have all that rather than have a subset in one news application, to have one specifically for it. Rafe, take us to the end of the show with your recommendation.
The application I want to talk about is, in fact, a game. It's called Roller Bee. And the reason I'm mentioning it is actually been created by a group of university students as part of a competition. And it was the winning entry. The winners get a Lumia 800 and off to GDC in California later in the year. But it just struck me as a rather impressively produced game in terms of graphic sound. It's a variation on the rollerball round a 3D landscape by tilting the phone, sort of the monkey ball style game. But I thought this was nicely implemented, and for 79p, it's a nice little distraction. There are sort of 9 levels to work through, getting progressively more difficult, plus 3 bonus levels if you collect the pieces. But actually, what impressed me was, yes, nice graphics, that's done well, but actually the controls were very responsive, even on the phones that don't have that extra G sensor, which obviously makes the tilt motion more sensitive when from the programming point of view. So a thumbs up from me.
Links to all of those applications can be found back at www.allaboutwindowsphone.com. If you're listening to this month down the line, just click on the tab and navigate. This was Insight Show number 14. So it should be relatively easy to find. And it's relatively easy to find us every week as well. You get us back in the website. There's an RSS feed. You can subscribe to us in iTunes. You can even leave a review for the podcast there and let us know what you think about it. But for now, it's a goodbye from myself, Ewan Spence, and the All About Insight team of Rafe Blanford.
Goodbye, everybody.
David Gilson.
Thank you for listening. Talk to you next week.
And Steve Litchfield.
Goodbye for now.
And it's a goodbye to all of you out there as well. We'll catch you on the website and speak to you next week. But for now, ta-ra.